Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Broadcasting live on the American Freedom Radio Network all across the US. Hey, you know what's real funny? New Zealanders, about 20% of New Zealanders that exist on the earth today do not live in New Zealand. About 4 million people in this country, and there's about 1 million New Zealanders all the rest of the way around the world. We have like an expat army. Very well-traveled people, New Zealanders in general. They're all over the place. And quite frankly, I think it's good that there's only a few of us. I think it makes us more special and rare, you know, to come across, oh, is it New Zealander? How interesting. It's like coming across somebody who's like, oh, he's from Tunisia. How interesting. You know, just an obscure, random, out-of-the-way place that you're probably never going to go visit. How interesting. Now, speaking of which, when you're looking into countries that are overseas, just bear in mind I got brought into the truth movement because of what the Americans were talking about. And now I'm bringing Americans and New Zealanders into the truth movement by showing what everybody's going on about. But we have a special focus on New Zealand sometimes. And in this particular case, we're going to be approaching two subjects during today's show. Firstly, if it can be resolved, we'll be having up a guy named Anthony O'Hillsider, I think is the way it's pronounced. And he's got like Irish flag. He talks about John Key and a lot of his dirty, dodgy dealings. And we've had people on talking about John Key in his past and dirty, dodgy dealings before. So when Anthony approached me and he said, I've got stuff on John Key that, you know, will blow your mind, starts telling me all this stuff. And I was like, I know that. I know that. I know that. Ooh, I didn't know that. And last night, a truther listener, I think by the name of Stephen, came around here and we hung out for about an hour or two, and then I drove him back to his hotel. He's just visiting the city for a little while and back home to Fielding. And something at some point during the conversation, I revealed to him that every single truther you talk to, no matter what their experience level, they'll always be able to teach you something you don't know. Such is the complexity and the scope of the truth movement and ways to enter into it, that there's infinite complexity among human beings to the point where you can have a conversation with any truther anywhere at any time, and at some point they'll tell you something that you certainly don't know already know. And I think that's the difference, because I think it was Ian R. Crane told me, he was on holiday with a couple of other English people, and, you know, being a truther and whatever, he kind of shied away from the conversations where they were just talking about nonsense and nothing and TV shows and what have you, just only really talking about the serious issues. And the real problem I've started to find with that was, he said, was that he thought he was getting ostracized. But what was interesting is somebody came out of that crowd of people who were all talking about nothing. They came out to Ian, like, I think it was toward the end of the trip, and they said, you know, Ian, you don't talk any BS, do you? You know, he didn't say BS. He really said the real word. And he says, well, what are you talking about? He says, well, the old time that we've been on this trip, we've been talking about nothing and nonsense and BS, and there's been some real interesting and thoughtful stuff in there, isn't it? But you've only really participated when we're talking about the interesting and intellectual things. You had none of the BS. was like, yeah. Point of respect, I think. Because when you respect somebody else, you not only respect them for what they do, you respect them also for what they refuse to do. You know, if somebody refuses to be bullied around or something, that commands respect. And the human race, I find, has lost that kind of respect for itself. And for a long time, has allowed bullies and liars and other assorted scumbaggery to run everything. They've abdicated everything, right? There is literally nothing left for anyone to have. It's horrific because you wonder, how did we get into this situation? Okay. I was born into a generation that had no idea what tyranny felt like. We weren't part of the war. We didn't see the Vietnam War. As far as we were concerned, the Gulf War was a blink through history. Maybe a few things here or there on the television screens about it. But we didn't experience any of it. We don't know what people really had to lay down on the line. We don't know what it was like for them. A whole generation with no idea what it's like to sacrifice everything for your freedom. No wonder society's going into disarray. This has not been taught because all those people that came back from seeing this stuff didn't want to talk about it. And because, and I think that this is something that I'm just thinking about now, is quite important. The elder generations should talk about all the stuff that was painful and suffering and all of that kind of stuff. That is the meat and potatoes of life. The worst experiences that you'll ever have are the ones that teach you the most valuable lessons. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to lose everything. Well, in some cases, I guess figuratively you do. Especially when the fabrication of reality that we're being presented, like an election or anything that is sold to us on television these days, it's a cancer for your mind. And it is eating everything in the entire world. It's like those nanobots on G.I. Joe. They shoot a missile of it at you and they suddenly start consuming everything in every direction and nothing stops. It's what happens to your morality when you don't know what it costs to protect it. You know, we have a civil society. You walk down the street and not get mugged or have to even conceive of getting mugged because it happens so rarely. Okay? That kind of public order didn't just emerge out of the ether. It emerged out of ethos. People actually giving a damn. Unfortunately, I'm starting to see an entire generation it's being stolen away from that idea that you can make a better society by just giving a damn and working at it to this, I don't know, floaters, I think is how you can describe them. Like jellyfish. Spineless. Float on the breeze. Repeat anything they see on television, in the magazines, on the TV. Work hard all day, every day. Drink hard and spend everything they could save or improve their economic situation with on alcohol or anything else. That's the generation. A generation of debtors. Man, can't afford to buy ciggies this week. Guess I'm going to have to go down the bank and get a credit card. Jeepers creepers, mate. What are you doing? You're a freaking idiot. Wake up. Act under the assumption that there is something going on here, something that you're maybe not aware of. That's what I do. I assume that I'm not aware of stuff until it's brought to my attention. And it turns out that I'm right. There's a heck that I'm not aware of. How could anybody be all-knowing and all-seeing and blah, 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 blah? It's stupidity in the extreme. We could just chill out, stop taking everything so absolutely seriously, and suddenly recognize that, oh my God, our relationships are actually really important. Why am I fighting with everybody in my own life when it's not them who's really trying to mess me over? Why am I trying to wake up my family when they won't listen? Why don't I just play cards with them and watch TV with them like I used to and find other people who actually do want to hear about it and hang out with them so that I can feel accepted? I'm going to find them in a chat room. There's bound to be somebody in my city. Oh my God, here we are. There's like five people within a couple of kilometers of me that I could drive to right now, have a coffee or a beer with or something like that, get to know and have some fun with. Okay? That's the thing the New World Order doesn't want you to do. They don't want you to get around with people. They don't want you to get along with people. They don't want you to have social contact. It is extremely, extremely important. The more social contact you have, the more skilled you become at it. Okay? Just like anything. The more you play pinball, the more skilled you become at pinball. The more movies you make, the more skilled you become at movie making. It's pretty straightforward. If you want to change the world and if you want people to listen to you, then you've got a hell of a lot of work to do by talking to heaps and heaps of people who won't listen to you until you figure out what works, how to approach the situation in a series of trial and error. Do you have the capacity to do that? Yes, you do. Are you going to do it? That's your choice. Depends whether or not you can find time for it. I found that if you cut 6 hours of television out of the day, you can find time for a fracking hell of a lot of things. And it's like a whole work day. It's excruciating the amount of time we waste. All day, every day, on stuff that doesn't matter. I've caught up on like 3 seasons of Walking Dead. Really? Well, I walk down the street hundreds of times talking to the Walking Dead and trying to convince them that 9/11 was an inside job, and maybe convinced about 10 or 20 of them out of the 100 or so that I spoke to. Who knows? Maybe the simple logic that kerosene-based jet fuel and giant aluminium cans traveling at high speed aren't capable of turning hundreds of thousands of tons of steel and concrete into atomized dust particles. It's not possible. You know, that's why it's easy to convince people of conspiracy theories, because you're just going to put it in the most simple terms possible to make it look like a fracking joke, because that's what it is. These people are playing jokes on us all the time. You know what the New Zealand government's doing now? Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? They are going to give free, semi-permanent, wait for it, contraception to women on a benefit so that they don't have any more kids. And we've seen these types of quote-unquote reversible contraception techniques before. And if you do Google searches on the particular types of them that have been mentioned in the New Zealand Herald articles and on the news, you will find a extremely large number of women who are complaining that there's something wrong, that their periods are irregular, that they can't have babies at all after the device is removed. Now, somebody said to me what I focus on chemtrails, because it's, you know, it's one obscure thing or whatever, one poison that barely affects us out of the many that do. I said, fair point. Do you know the meaning of the word cumulative? That's what's happening here with all this contraception as well. It's not meant to solve the whole problem and everything, all of that. It's about making it cumulative so that people will gradually, that's one method, get sterile and stop having children, okay? The elite and the New World Order do not want us to breed at all. Too many people, too many people, too many people. This is what everybody's talking about. You know what's interesting? You got the landmass of Australia. Granted, most of it's desert. But think about the landmass size. 1.88 billion hectares. Or acres, sorry. Now, if you take the population of the Earth, about 7 billion, you divide by 1.88 billion, winds up roughly being about 0.25 of an acre per pop, which is the average size of a suburban house, you know, with a little backyard in it. You fit the whole world in that one continent. There's only 1%, and that's not living in a tower blocks or anything like that. That's spread out with a quarter acre a pop. Okay, only 1% of the Earth's population is 1% of the Earth's surface is fracking urbanized. Okay, there is not too many people. There's too many scumbags controlling the resources, making life harder. We'll be right back after the break.
A show that is plagued with technical difficulties, like locusts, engineered by Monsanto, of course, eating your genetically modified crop. It's very unfortunate. My very special guest, surprise guest, in fact, is the Liverpoolian and absolutely debonair, Darren Keith Williams. Welcome to the show.
It is time for the horror to begin.
He has the real kind of demonic, sort of vampirical, Draculian laugh, does he not?
No, it's not about that. It's about trying to keep a grip on the madness we are experiencing. And what
does that mean, embracing the madness and an almighty hug, Darren, at times?
At times it just means, as John Lennon said, a fellow Scouser, that you have to use humour as a weapon against their tyranny and their wickedness. And it's the thing that pompous bourgeois people hate the most, is actually just laughing at their pathetic, grandiose plans and their arrogance. Since speaking with you, I remember you told me that rather than sit on the sidelines, that ultimately we're all going to be in some sort of tyranny, or we're all going to be in some sort of prison camp. So I might as well have got my act together and started expressing these views we were speaking about privately on Skype. And I took your advice, and I've got a blog, and the blog is really doing well. It's through a friend of mine who is a dance promoter, as in music, and DJ in Liverpool, and a number of people that were connecting with his blog wanted to know around occult symbolism in music videos. A big rumour was going around. Obviously, we've heard it because we're in the know, and I think the listenership is in the know. But a lot of people were saying, is it true Lady Gaga's putting Satanist stuff in, or Daft Punk, or this or that? And he just said, you're the perfect man, do it. So I took the initiative, and you passed the baton metaphorically to me, and I'm just putting it out there. And since then, I've met Ian R. Crane. I've gone to a workshop of his. I've looked at Aleister Crowley's effect in the with the Beatles, especially, which is ironic because, again, the Beatles are from Liverpool. And then I've done another one on Adidas and their pathetic response to the UK riots last year. And I've done a recent one around, gosh, there's been so many, but the next one's going to be on the Nazis and how basically Operation Paperclip is the reason why we are all where we are at the moment. So it's expanding my knowledge and it's freaking me out. So I have to have that demonic laugh in a way to counteract that. Because if I don't, I will be going crazy like Alex Jones. And I think we can't go crazy because ultimately that's what they want us to be. They want us to be scared and shivering in a corner and begging them for protection, even then in a twisted way. We know that they're the oppressors. So they want like a Stockholm Syndrome scenario, but on a global basis.
Nah, man, it's gonna be like a deck home scenario where everybody just goes, oh, we're all screwed. Let's just freak out together.
Yeah, something like that. And the biggie events, I think, is linking two things. One is the hit film I seen yesterday in the cinema. It was a bank holiday in England yesterday. So my brother and I went to see Marvel Avengers. And in a strange way, the promotion of that film was, sorry, this is a bit of a spoiler if nobody's seen it, but there was one scene where Samuel Jackson's character actually justified lying to the team of the Avengers to motivate them. And when he was challenged on that, he actually said, well, sometimes you've got to lie to have a result. And I was like, what is this about? Kids are watching this stuff. And then the other one was at the end of the film when the good guys won due to an alien invasion. It unified the world and it inspired the world to greater and greater goodness and purity and community and neighbourhood, and it was just unreal. But the scary thing is that a lot of people in the alternative field, I don't call it conspiracy no more, that word's been maligned by very ignorant people. I like to use the word alternative, but a lot of people in the alternative field are saying that something's mega going to happen at the London Olympics, and Liverpool is 200 miles north of that location. So I, at first looking into it, I thought it was all nonsense, but then the people who were doing the opening ceremony for the music are called Underworld, and for everybody that wants to go on YouTube, one of their biggest best known songs was called King of Snake. So you have that, and then the closing ceremony on the 12th of August is by an interesting lady called Ez Devlin, believe it or not, and she's responsible for the stage shows of Gaga, Kanye and Jay-Z, Rihanna,
basically all the extremely occult ones are stage managed by the same person. Ergo, the people who are doing these dances have no idea what they're being instructed to do, that they're actually doing an occult ritual. They just think they're doing a dance for a Hollywood person. You know, it's going to be great. Fantastic. And meanwhile, all the kids and all the people in the stadium and everybody who's doing this little dance, unbeknownst to them, are taking part in a grand ritual.
I've got something even better. On Saturday, as everyone knows, it was something known as a supermoon. That's the largest moon of the year worldwide. And on that evening, they decide to officially open the Olympic Stadium. It's just unreal. If people think I am out of this, I recommend that you check a guy who's not with us anymore, but he's a brilliant guy called Rick Clay. That is R-I-K. Clay, and you can listen to 4 hours of this. And by the time you listen to 4 hours, you too will have a Darren Demonic laugh, guaranteed, or your money back. That's it, people. So, you know, so they're gearing us up for an alien invasion. We've got Battleship. That is another major Hollywood film with Rihanna in it that will be out worldwide in a couple of weeks. We also Okay.
And I went to see it in the cinema the other week, mate. Well, how come? Is it not out in the UK yet?
Well, no. Maybe what they're trying to do is get it near an Olympic time to get people in the gear for it. So that's very interesting. So it's not out in the UK yet. And then
Oh my God. That's weird. New Zealand got Battleship before the UK did. Suck it.
There you go. You got the brainwashing before us. So,
to be honest, it was pretty average, bro. You know, they hype it up as being what's it called? A Michael Bay film. You know, Michael Bay's done the Transformers, and he's done the old Armageddon and Bad Boys and all that kind of stuff. Very, very occult filmmaker, of course. I mean, like in Bad Boys 2, for example, one of the trucks that's like driving around or whatever in one of the shots has a Masonic compass and square on the side of it. And there's so much symbolism and neurolinguistic programming in all the films, and they're extremely entertaining, which is why I went to watch it. And it turns out it wasn't even directed by him; it was directed by some other douchebaggery.
Well, the other
it was thoroughly disappointing, man.
The other interesting one that I want everybody to check out for is the new Batman film, which is very, very strange. I saw the trailer for it, and it's almost talking about the end of capitalism, and almost it is, how can I say, it's almost pro Bane, it's almost pro the bad guy in it, in that Bruce Wayne is this billionaire playboy and everybody else obviously is suffering, and Bane is coming to Gotham to destroy capitalism. So you're thinking, why is Warner Brothers, that is a $1 trillion company, making an anti-capitalist movie? So there's a lot of strange things happening this year in terms of mass media and mass brainwashing, possibly. So it is going to be the year of years, and you know, you're going to listen to it on the Vinnie Eastwood show. And you can check my blog, which is called Darren's Alternative Theory, which is out the first of every month on General Jimmy. That's all one word, generaljimmy.com. And I, along with Vinny, will hopefully lead you on the path to sanity in this most insane period of human history.
Well, see, I'm going to wonder about this. You can't experience... Well, hold on a second. Who was I talking with us about? You know, Jordan Maxwell, Alan Watt, Freeman, a lot of the top occult researchers, right? Mm. Now, each one of them, as far as I know, in recent times, is feeling the pinch, either financially, emotionally, or they're getting it on the age perspective, right? Yeah. Now, the thing that I got to wonder is, these people have all warned everybody, don't get into the occult research field with your eyes closed. Okay, like, you get what you pay for. You want to look at the darkest and the scariest and the most horrific stuff that's ever existed in all of mankind, you'll get what you pay for. And they've all warned everybody because it's affected all of them. And I don't know, Darren. I mean, maybe the occult side of things is something that maybe should be restricted a little bit. Perhaps I don't know.
I believe, looking into my research, that we are basically here. We have to be here at this time, and everybody is. I think everybody naturally is either a Sith or a Jedi, to use a film phrase. George Lucas, your check is on the post. And basically, you are attracted to where you need to be. and it is of a greater significance, and we just naturally go to that. And one of the examples, people might say, oh, he's talking all cosmic. Well, one of the examples of that is if you look at the CERN facility in Switzerland, which is this ode to man's technological perfection, what's outside of it but a massive statue of the goddess Shiva that it donated from the Indian government. The goddess Shiva is the goddess of death and destruction. So therefore, there must be something there that is of a spiritual, of a cosmic nature. And whilst I know what you're saying about looking into the occult, I think I have people I speak to who I can express my worries, my angst, my new discoveries. You know, it's like the stuff I'm looking at a paperclip is mind-boggling. I'm coming to a conclusion that the Americans realised after World War II that the industrial world was soon ended, as in people working in factories, and the new world was coming where you needed less people because there'd be less jobs due to the introduction of technology. So what are you going to do? You need to get rid of people. And who were the perfect people who were crazy enough and who were genius enough to get rid of vast populations of people but Nazis? So this disease of Nazism has sort of mutated into a lust for mass murder. So some of the Nazis are still alive. They've obviously had children, which is scary enough, and then their children have obviously had grandchildren. So it's created very, very strange bedfellows indeed, where it's not so much about anti-Semitism or racial purity. It's more now about an elitism. So this is why we all know people under the age of 30 who have had cancer. And all I'm seeing in Britain is do a jog for cancer, do a marathon for cancer, eat spaghetti bolognese for a month for cancer. All this money's going into cancer research, and yet it's still the same. In fact, it's getting worse. And there isn't any major conference, any red alert, any prime minister, major people, celebrities saying, right, we've got to have a sit down and really see what is happening with this disease. Because at the moment, cancer in the UK, it seems to be running rampant. It seems to be really, like, increasing. So it's coming to these conclusions, but you've got to have faith. You've got to, I don't know. I'm a spiritual person, not so much a religious person. And I believe that, you know, I am here at this period of time. I wasn't born in another period, and I hear the music.
Yeah, well, being spiritual and being religious are mutually exclusive. We'll be right back after the... I'm joking. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, ladies and gentlemen. You can join us in the chat room there. And I think we're going to crack open the lines. 218-339-8525 is the number to call. We'll be right back.
Yeah, yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo. Yeah, but I'm here now. So what you wanna do? Huh? How many dudes you really know? Like this, like this, like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this?
Not many, if any, not many, if any.
How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody. Check to the mic, check a 1-2.
Welcome back.
Where you hype yet? Nowadays everybody wanna talk.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. There's no show like the Vinnie Eastwood Show online, okay?
Exclusive.
Yeah. We're just trying to keep it bangster. All right? And trying to keep it real and what have you. In a downtown Bronx sense of the word. My very special guest from Liverpool is Darren Keith Williams.
And we've been talking about the occult and the, you know, various other forms of on stage Hollywood scumbaggery. Because, well, I think, have you noticed that there is a huge amount of strippers all over the television, like the music videos and what have you, at about the same time when kids come home to watch their cartoons and what have you, you know, just, you know, strippers, Dragon Ball Z, you know, you just flip the channels. It's I think it's pretty horrendous. Like, it's getting to the point now where music videos are so badly over-sexualized, and yet for some reason they're capable of playing it on daylight television while children can watch it. You know, there's no parental guidance necessary or anything like that. I don't know. Maybe that's just something that's just me. But as far as I've seen, there's an increasingly sexual appetite growing out there amongst people to be very flippant and promiscuous. And it's happened, I feel, very much in line with what is it? Brave New World? A citizen's duty is promiscuity.
It is, isn't it? What it is it's the whole good and bad deal of it. I have to make a confession. I have been with ladies who have got more intelligence than maybe 2 peas, garden peas, not more than 3. But sexually and in that base level, we connect superbly. And that is the battle of the individual. Do you go for your higher self or do you go for your lower self? And like all young men, I have this battle. So it is very tough, but they tap into it, and they, being the people who are the masters of control, they obviously amplify it to such levels, and it is very, very tough. But what I want to do, I want to switch something. Can I just switch it a bit, Vinny? I've got an idea. Just want to switch it. I, at first, and it's very controversial, so you can call into the Vinny Eastwood show if you disagree, or you agree, or you partially do. I was very optimistic about Ron Paul. I thought, as somebody outside looking in, he was going to bring a change for the better. But after careful study, in my own opinion, I believe that he is not the answer, but he could be a version of something much more worse in a different manner. The reason being is he promotes a style of economics called the Austrian School of Economics, which very closely aligns itself to necessity is the mother of invention. And what is keeping America back is people are not keeping in with that revolutionary ingenuity, that spark of originality, and corporations and government together in a fascist tag team are bringing that down. Now, whilst that sounds great, to me personally, it's very idealistic. If you take the areas of America such as Detroit, such as Baltimore, such as areas of Washington, D.C. and other areas. If Ron Paul or Rand Paul was to gain any type of political influence, whilst for a British person, I would be delighted because it would mean that America's military might would quickly evaporate around the world and go back to the American nation as a more defence force than the current an attack dog force that it currently is. But for the American people, I could see it getting worse. So what we have to do is we can't get trapped and played like I personally got played by Tony Blair in 1997 when he became British Prime Minister, and I got played again by Obama in 2008. because obviously he was talking change, and I thought he was from an ethnic background so we could connect with the common man, and what a joke that was. So we can't get fooled, three times a charm. I realise a lot of people are going to listen to this who are Ron Paul supporters, and maybe you can convince me, a Brit, as to why I'm wrong. And another thing,
well, here's Ron Paul, first of all, won a couple of states, and the criminal government had to commit fraud in order to make that not happen. If that's not an indictment of how awesome Ron Paul is and how much we need him to fight the globalist, I don't know what is.
But is it out of the sense that there's nobody better? So you would just go with the best of a bad bunch, if you want to call Ron Paul that, because I can't see...
Here's the question. What constitutes a bad bunch? Now, if you have a look at the characteristics of corrupt politicians, for instance, they vote yes on things that sell out the country, increase its debt, allow foreigners to take it over. They get paid endorsement monies and recruit lobbyists and have meetings with them all the time. They have backroom deals with business people and globalist organizations. They belong to many globalist groups, etc. Has Ron Paul been guilty of any of those?
No, he is not to my knowledge.
So he's not part of the bad bunch then? It's just that simple.
According to the rapper Immortal Technique, his son Rand Paul has took AIPAC money. And if anybody knows who AIPAC is, they are a major Zionist lobby group, a pro-Israeli pro-attack Iran, American, Israeli, Zionist.
And they're also the "I will destroy your entire political career in an instant if you don't take money from us" organization. AIPAC is as far as I'm concerned, AIPAC is a terrorist organization. You know, like if you say anything bad about Israel, you know. If you remember on Lord of the Rings, how Bilbo Baggins, he saw the ring again as Frodo held it in front of him, and his face kind of changed into that scary kind of monster as he lunged towards it. Oh, I'm sorry, my boy. I'm sorry I've brought this on you. You know, that's what AIPAC does.
So, but this is my question. So this is a open invitation to anybody listening to American Freedom Radio, or if you know somebody that is a rabid Ron Paul supporter, I would like to know why you feel so strongly about this man, because I watch Alex Jones, and Alex Jones gives it the big one about Mr. Paul and Adam Kokesh, who I really do respect in a lot of ways. He absolutely adores Ron Paul and sees him as the answer. But again, if anybody's watched The Wire, the famous HBO series called The Wire, the Austrian School of Economics is not going to benefit Baltimore. The Austrian School of Economics is not going, in my opinion, going to change humanity and people's personalities of race and class distinction.
He doesn't just believe in some kind of school of economics. He wants to audit the Fed and get rid of it. I don't care what your economic policy is, because once you end the Fed, you're sweet.
Not necessarily, because if you... I agree that he wants to end the Fed. I stand with him with that. I stand with him bringing American troops back on American soil. I am firmly with that. But the big one, Vinny, is the Austrian School of Economics plan, because if he was to become president, then you could, in effect, see mass poverty, or you could see some sort of serious civil unrest.
I'm not saying
people to vote for Obama. I'm just looking for a careful examination of Mr. Paul. Like, I should have examined Tony Blair. I should have examined Barack Obama. So it's up to your listeners. Why is Ron Paul so special?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. 218-339-8525 if you want to answer the question. 218-339-8525. What makes Ron Paul so special? Can you trust him? I personally think, yeah. I've seen him do and say a lot of things. And I've seen people do and say a lot of things about him that later on haven't turned out to be true at all and were simply misconceptions. But I don't know. My mind's always open to everything, especially if I already think I know what it is, because I'm probably wrong. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. 218-339-8525. Back in a few minutes. Number two, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, we have a caller who's been hanging online, coincidentally, for 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Area code 630. What's your first name and state you're calling from, please?
Yeah, what's up? This is Chris from Illinois.
Hey, Chris, what's up, man?
The thing about Ron Paul is, when you look into government, it's like the problem with government is that it's a family business. So while Ron Paul don't really have no ties to none of the elite families,
Chris, hold on, just a second. Do you have the radio on in the background then?
No, sir.
Okay, sorry. Keep on going then.
Okay, so while Ron Paul he don't tie back to no elite families, he got an uncle by the name of Oswald Paul, P-O-H-L, who was in the SS Army. And that's not too good for black people that's Ron Paul crazy.
He was in the SS?
Yes, sir. Oswald Paul.
Interesting. Very interesting. And what relation to Ron Paul was he? Was he an
that's
uncle?
That's his great uncle.
Okay. Did he come across to America under Operation Paperclip, or did he die in the war, or what happened to him?
I believe he did make it over to America. I believe he made it over to America and was prosecuted.
And then sent to jail and then executed, or did
yeah,
he...
Yeah, look him up. Google him. I'm not around a computer right now, but you can look him up. It's the Oswald... like the regular spelling, and Paul, P-O-H-L.
Oswald.
You yeah. See, I knew something was afoot.
Yeah. All right, there we go. Yeah, he's fully decked out in his Nazi uniform, all right.
As a matter of fact, I believe Ron Paul has a whole family line full of Knights Templars and Masonic Papal Knights and all of those good Roman cocksuckers.
Well, you can't apparently say the C sucker word on the FCC regulated radio.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Please.
You can't say Nazi scumbaggery though.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, can I interrupt, Vinny?
You frequently do.
Thank you. Guest, what town are you from?
Oh, I'm in a suburb, right, not too far from Chicago.
All right, so you're in Chicago, a area of, I don't know, high black population, such a high murder rate, etc. So if, say, a history of racism... Mayor Daley, his like a Julius Caesar type rule.
Ron Paul and Rahm Emanuel and Aragon.
Oswald Paul is actually the great uncle, and what was the other one? He was a general
of the SS.
A general of the SS.
Well,
Ron Paul Revolution.
Well, in my research about the Nazis, for somebody to actually be in the SS, they had to, he just didn't get that. We'd get collecting coupons from cornflake boxes. You got that not through your prowess as a actual soldier. You got it through your blood lineage, and you had to trace your lineage.
It's like the CIA.
Well, I don't know about that, but you have to prove your
lineage. Yeah. You have a look at the CIA, man. They're all related families.
Like Obama.
You basically can't get into the CIA.
Like Obama. Obama's CIA on his black side and his white side.
But what I'm trying to say about the SS is that you had to show that you had so many generations that you were pure Germanic or Aryan. And then it was a cult. It wasn't just a branch of the German military machine. It was an occult religious ideology. So if somebody was an SS officer, that is pretty hardcore.
He's not just an officer. He's a freaking general. So we're talking about high-level demonology kind of stuff being practiced.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So we're learning.
All right, Chris in Illinois has unfortunately been lost. We're going to go now to Tim in D.C. Tim, what's up, man?
Hey, no, what's happening, Vinny? I was listening to y'all talking about the wrong Paul. You know, for me, I don't trust none of them. I think the thing is him special because he stands what people kind of want to hear. Like, we all know about the Federal Reserve and the wars. I mean, that's the language that you have to get past. And if he's telling you something that you want to hear, he just like, put his teeth on the Titanic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so
I agree with you there. You really can't. I think it's the system itself basically means that you can't trust the politicians, because in order to get successful in politics, you can't do the right thing. It's the system does not allow for you to do the right thing and then get elected. It allows for you to get elected and then break all your promises in order to do the right thing, basically. And then, you wind up with several bullets through your head or something.
And we all know, no matter what your campaign promise is, we all know it's out in the open now. And once you get inaugurated, you got these group of people that see you in the back room and they tell you what your job and your duties are, what you can and you can't do. And if you go astray, then, you know, they put the JFK move on you and you become a puppet just like everybody else. The system is already set. That's, man, I've listened to so many people, so many of the radio personalities. I don't have to name them. We all know who they are. And people know the system is already set. Just different faces. So, and I watch movies. I watch a lot of old black and white movies. Like Outer Limits and stuff like that. Hollywood hasn't changed. It's different actors, same kind of, they did the same scripts and the same choreography they had back then. You still got them there. It's just different people doing the same old game. So, I mean, Ron Paul says a lot of nice things, but come on, we're talking about the system here.
Well, let's not talk about the things he says. Let's talk about the things he has actually done. What bills has he introduced? Can you think of any?
You said what now?
What bills has he introduced into Congress?
I haven't really been paying attention to him. I mean, every now and then I'll go back and I'll listen to him, and they say certain bills that he... Now, one thing I've heard that he... certain bills that he didn't sign on, but I mean, I really haven't been following him, so I really can't even answer that question, you know, with a concrete answer.
See, now this is the thing. There's an old saying: the best reason to say that you don't want a democracy is an average 5-minute conversation with a voter. You know, because you quickly find out. Even us, you know, we don't know much about our politicians. We really. Truly don't. None of us. Even us truthers. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, man, I don't know nothing about John Key and John Banks and all of these other corrupt politicians here. I know nothing about Barack Obama. I know plenty about them, but not what they do and what they have done in a lot of cases. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I don't have a clue about.
So that's why we have to speak.
Now that's that's the reason why democracy in its current form cannot work, because the information simply isn't there for people to make what would be seen as quote-unquote an informed decision. That would be qualified by somebody actually being informed or having any information about their candidates. When was the last time you actually got any real documented information about your candidates that you read through and could remember and recite at a moment's notice? It doesn't happen. Politics isn't right. Like that. People don't have any realistic perspective of politics anymore. It's strange because it's what rules your life, and people pay little attention to it, have no idea what its real mechanics are, and every single moment of their life is affected in every single way by it.
Right, and the thing, when they talk about these bills, these bills are hundreds of pages long. What politician is going to sit down and read every single page of a bill and sign it? I mean, I'm trying to look at this realistically. Who's going to sit down and read every single page on the bill to know what's exactly in it or what's not in it? And democracy, well, as we know, that's like the majority rule. So if the majority rules, and I'm voting for something, and I don't get, and I'm outnumbered, I'm still stuck. So it's like, I mean, I don't know, Vinny. We can go all day with this.
Well, I say we should, quite frankly, because you really do have to expand on almost everything you can. But anyway, Tim, for you personally, do you recall what kind of got you interested in Ron Paul in the first place? I mean, do you remember when you first heard about him?
Back in 08, during the they had a Democratic and a Republican race back in 08. That's when I first heard of Ron Paul. I never heard about him before then. And I started hearing a lot of good things he was saying. I'm like, okay, I knew about the Federal Reserve since 95. So that's old information. The New World Order, that's way old information for me. So when I started hearing him talking about shutting down the Federal Reserve and Dr. Ward and I mean, all this good talk, I'm like, okay, this dude is sharp. He's making a lot of sense. So I was, I was kind of like with it, So, but when I started looking at the grander scheme of it, that's maybe his purpose, to divert some of the voters to go along with him. I said, okay, this dude's talking about shutting down the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve is, is doing this and that, and I'm okay. But then when you come out of that kind of fog, you understand, okay, the system is ran like this. You're not going to shut the Federal Reserve down. That's point blank. I mean, I don't care how you put it, no president is going to. You can shut it down if you want. I mean, Kennedy tried to do it, and, there's other various reasons why they took him out. That's where you pay your federal tax dollars. All your federal tax dollars go to the Federal Reserve.
And the thing about Ron Paul, that's very interesting. Through my study of his campaign, is that I haven't seen him in Baltimore, I haven't seen him in DC, I haven't seen him in Atlanta, I haven't seen him in a place called Slab City, which is, you can look that up, that's in the Nevada desert. There's people sleeping in the sewers of Las Vegas, one of the richest places in the world, and people are homeless sleeping in the sewers of that city due to homelessness. I've not seen him reach out to the destitute. I've seen him reach out to these people who are middle class or want to be entrepreneurs, and he's preaching to them. I'm not seeing him going into the gutter and getting them people. Maybe those people haven't got money, but the ironic thing was, the thing that got Obama to the presidency in 2008 was working class people who were giving him $5 and $10 donations. That's a fact. But I'm not seeing that type of outreach. Now, I'm not a fan of Obama. In fact, I'm more furious about Obama due to something I found about what he did this week, which is unreal, which possibly has shades of him being a psychopath. But on the Ron Paul thing...
He became president. What more proof do you, of psychopathy do you need?
Oh, no, I've got the big one. I've got the big kahuna. according to his autobiography, this is an autobiography by him, he created characters that were composites of people that he had met in his life. And the reason he created these composites was due to making the book shorter. So it's like me meeting three people in my life. I'm getting a bit of John, a bit of Sue, and a bit of Paul, and then turning them three people into Veronica and saying, yeah, this is me and Veronica, and this is me and Veronica, and their impact in my life. And this is in the man's autobiography. And when it got exposed this week, I've even read the man's autobiography, Dreams of My Father. But at the time, I was so hypnotized by him in 2008. Normally a rational, analytical person like myself, it just passed me by. And it says within the book, some characters within this book are actually composites of people that I have met. So it shows the power of Obama. So I don't want people listening to this thinking, oh, you're an Obama supporter. In fact, I am worse on Obama, because ultimately he is a minority and he should know what it is like to be downtrodden, and he should know the struggles of his people. He has done nothing, and he was humiliated. I was made up he was humiliated by Jimmy Kimmel in that White House correspondence dinner around his new draconian drive to attack marijuana in America, when he said in his book that when he was a youth he used to smoke a joint. So I am no fan of Barack Obama, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, you have to analyse people. And as Gerald Celente says, if you don't find these people up to the grade, don't vote for them. Don't vote for them whatsoever. Because Ron Paul, I've even found out he's now against a Race Relations Act that was the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that is seen by many people as being one of the historic turning points of American history, because he says he brings affirmative action and that is unconstitutional, so therefore the bill should be banned. So now I'm thinking, well, you know, if maybe you went to Baltimore and maybe you spoke to some people where The Wire was filmed, then maybe you would get a different perspective on it. But it seems that Mr. Paul isn't interested in that. He wants to attract these Adam Kokesh people, these white, maybe professional educated people who are middle class, who are fed up with getting taxed, who just want to get richer. And nobody is for the underdog. And nobody is for the man in the gutter, in the dirt, just trying. And this is what I want the listeners to look at it. What do you want? Do you just want to vote for somebody, or do you want to change? Don't let blood be on your hands, because Barack Obama comes in, it's going to get worse. But Ron Paul comes in, it could get even worse. So please call in if you agree, if you disagree. Tell me your reality and tell me, a British person, am I right or am I wrong about the great, the wonderful, the hero? Dun, 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 dun,
we'll be right back. Paul. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. necessarily the EveneEastwoodShow.com. And we're looking for donations and subscriptions. So if you have $5 a month, or any donation, really, I mean, you kind of get the same thing out of it. Go to TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can subscribe for $5 a month and you get access to commercial-free archives. And I also do off-air interviews with webcams with Patriots and Truthers from all around the world, and we give you those commercial-free as well. So if you're listening every single day to an archive-free show, it saves you about 30 minutes of listening time. So it's 2.5 hours a week it saves you, 10 hours a month for $5. How much is your time worth? Do you get paid 50 cents an hour? all right. So anyway, that would be what you'd have to be paid in order for it to not be worth it to subscribe to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And also, you get to support me. And I go out there and expose scumbaggery all the time. And you can be safe for the knowledge that every single day that we do a broadcast, inform some people, wake people up, give people who never generally get a platform a chance to have their say or view. You're the ones who are responsible for it, and you will probably wind up being paying dearly for it in the future. Now, Lisa in East Texas is calling in as well. Lisa, sorry you've had to wait so long.
Hello?
Yeah?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, Vinny. Sorry. Hi. Yes, I'm just going to be, I'll just be real honest about Ron Paul. I've agreed with almost everything he's put forth. And I want to, in fairness to him, point out that, you know, Ron Paul does care about the downtrodden. He just has a different approach on how to do it. He believes that local communities should pick up the slack and take care of their poor and impoverished and needy. And he practiced what he preaches when he was in private medical practice. He would, if patients of his could not pay, he didn't charge them. He gave a lot of free medical care. And that's kind of the old school way things have been done and were done in America until the Roosevelt administration. My father also practiced that kind of medicine. So I think it's all about local communities taking care of their own, not a very dysfunctional, corruption-filled federal government. So that being said, I agree with that completely. I think that's what America was founded on, and we would be better off if we would return to that. Because local communities know what their local people need better than a federal government,
Yeah. I mean, look at it this way. Who knows, in a divorce situation, who knows more about what the kids are going through on a day-to-day basis, the parent who's with the children every day or the parent who gets them on the weekends?
Right. Absolutely. Same principle. But the one thing, there's been something I'm concerned that Ron Paul has said, and he said it back in 2001. And, you know, honestly, I would have to talk to him in depth to, you know, delve into what he said. Sometimes it's hard to get a complete knowledge of what's being said. But he did say there's nothing to fear from globalism. Free trade and a single worldwide currency. He thinks that if there were a single worldwide currency, it should be, based on gold, which would allow the middlemen to be eliminated and so forth. But my problem with that is I have a real problem with the free trade agreement we've had. It's decimated America's industry. I have a real problem with a single worldwide currency because there's no such thing as not having middlemen involved in a single worldwide currency, regardless of whether it's backed by gold. And as we all have figured out by now, even the gold market is manipulated. And we know who owns most of the gold in the world. And I own gold, and I'm an advocate of it, but I'm just saying I own it knowing that it is a manipulated market. And so that concerns me a little bit. I'm trying to be discerning, in my advocacy of people. And I'm done with the days of, putting all my faith and trust in one person. So that's my deal.
You know what, Lisa? It is kind of hard to be discerning when everybody's lying to you.
I know it is. But I just want to make sure and think through these things, and those particular things do concern me. I do not like a government-regulated economy. I tend to be more of a true, genuine free trade person, but I think that globalizing any system is always a dangerous idea. Granted,
What about this? A global free trade system that is anti-globalization and pro-sovereignty and what have you. So here's the problem, though. All of our politicians, they usually belong to these certain subject groups, whether they be Trilateral Commission or Council on Foreign Relations, etc. And what they do all the time is they bring them to meetings, you know, like at the Ritz Plaza Hotel, at the Scumbaggery Sphincter Hotel, you know, etc. And they give them these big conferences and they mix and mingle with other people that are all really powerful, really influential, that are all perpetrating the exact same ideologies and ideas. These conferences are all based on sustainability, globalization, free trade, blah, blah, blah. And now, what they're doing is they're always highlighting the good points of these things. And this is what happens when you're selling a product to somebody. You need to highlight the good points and just basically pray they don't ask you about the bad points, because then you're screwed. you know, that's what happens when you're selling somebody a product, because they can look at the positive side of it. And if that's all they need to know, then they'll be happy with the product. They'll be quite satisfied with what they've spent their money on, what they've invested their time in listening to the information about. However, looking at the same product that they would ordinarily be satisfied with, they would ask a few questions, the answers to which would not be pleasing to the average person. And that small detail of, oh, makes everything else that's good about that product suddenly fly out the window. And you actually go on your life actually being a little bit less worse off, because you really could have used that. And that's sometimes why salesmen try to keep those details from you. Because, and I think, I'm not sure if that's entirely moral either, because he's got a financial incentive.
True.
What if it was in a social situation? What if you were keeping information from somebody so that they wouldn't get hurt? It's the same principle, and their life's better for not knowing.
Well, I agree, and I don't agree with the principle of melding to whatever, molding yourself to morphing to whatever environment and kind of group you find yourself. That's the typical politician, and we need statesmen.
But we all do that every day, though, Lisa. You know how
I use
table manners in front of my mother than I do from other people, or eating pizza out of a box or whatever. You know, we all change our behaviors around different social situations. Like, for example, I wouldn't be using profanities, for example, if I was perhaps entertaining the Prime Minister or the Queen at my house or something of that nature. I mean, by goodness, I'd
like to,
but instead I'd be very nice and kindly and whatever, and trying to be respectful, because we all modify our behavior, whatever situation we're in. What matters is whether or not we still remain ourselves inside that behavioral shell. Politicians do not remain themselves inside that behavioral shell. They mold their entire body, not just their behaviors.
Right. Well, I guess I understand that, and I guess it just sounds so antithetical. Those statements sound so antithetical to everything else he says. So it kind of leaves you just, you know, you just kind of want to watch it. And you kind of want to see what else you don't know. You know what I'm saying? You just want, I want to make an informed decision, I guess is what I'm saying.
Basically, it's the age old, I need more information, man.
Absolutely. I'd like to see the product detail list, please. So, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to be honest about that. And, I do think there's so many wonderful things about him. And I've given money to his campaign. And, I think he's the best choice we have. But when I heard and saw his statements, I was like, wow, okay. you know, I'm confused now a little bit, so.
Oh, and by the way, just to clarify up that Oswald Pohl thing, he was sentenced to death by hanging at the Nuremberg trials. Well, they had a second Nuremberg trials in 1947, November 3rd. He was sentenced to death by hanging on August the 11th of 1948. That sentence was confirmed. And then in 1951, he was executed on June the 7th. So he didn't go to the United States at all. He was, you know, sentenced as an SS officer there in Germany and taken out. So I don't think that being a great uncle that Ron Paul was even born yet.
You know, I have a lot of German in me, and, you know, who knows? I might have a Nazi in my past as well. I don't know.
Wait. Ron Paul's like 80 years old. Ron Paul's like 80 years old. He might have been like about, a small boy at that time?
Yeah. Exactly, as my parents were.
But what's good about this is that what we are doing, we are pushing the paradigm, so to speak. We are looking into stuff that hasn't been looked into before.
See, now, this is another thing about the sales pitch, though. If you're Ron Paul and you're trying to sell freedom to the United States people, one of the things you leave out of your sales pitch, by the way, my great uncle was a Nazi SS general that was executed in 1951.
Oh, my God. It's true, but the guy keeps going on and on and on about the truth.
Wait, hold on a second. Have we even confirmed his relationship to Ron Paul?
But, you know, these are things that I find really interesting about the guy. Once you're out there in the public eye and you want to be president and you've got that finger on that nuclear button, I do want to know who your great-uncle is. You know what I'm saying? I want to know everything about you because you've got...
You know what? Hold on. This is an idea. When you become president, when you have the power to change people's lives and destroy countries at will, I do think that every single part of your life should become open to public scrutiny. Every single part of your life, or every report card you ever had from school, newspaper articles of you, if you did stuff like this, so people can actually see a chronicle of your life. And they'll be able to tell whether or not you are likely to just lie to them and blatantly and brazenly engage in scumbaggery and lead the country into a sinking ship called the Titanic, otherwise known as the Fed.
Well, and that's the other point. I think getting rid of the Federal Reserve is the single, well, one of the top priorities, because literally they do run our country. Our politicians do not run this country. They do not control this country. The financial, global elite banking system does. And we have to extricate that from
the power seat. Have you ever seen a cable tie bag, you know, you twist it around and it becomes kind of solid in the center and that's how you seal the bag off? You know, like a little baggie with twist-sticks.
Uh-huh.
I think basically what's going on here is that's what the Federal Reserve is. They're just a little, they're the twist-sticks on the baggie. And the air inside that baggie represents the freedom. They've got the constricted supply of it, okay? And they can let in as much or constrict as much as they want. That's the money supply, essentially. The power of trade. The power, which is the power of motion, the power of doing anything. Trade, currency, that's how everything flows. That's why they call it currency. And I think, quite frankly, that if you have a lake with no rivers going in or out of it, that lake's going to go stagnant, isn't it? And right now, the only river that you got coming into the US economy is the Fed. And it is a very polluted river indeed. And downstream comes all this quantitative easing, all of these banker bailouts.
and they tell everybody what the legislation is. Like, here's the situation in New Zealand. When you get elected Prime Minister, that night you get a call from Treasury. Guess what they tell you every single time you get elected Prime Minister? And this has been revealed in a documentary. They say, Mr. Prime Minister, there's been a huge economic crisis that's been building up in the background, and it's the last government's fault. So all those promises that you've been making to people, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to fulfill those, and you're going to need to cut this, that, and the other, and you're going to need to sell this state asset, and you're going to do that, and you're going to have to pass this draconian legislation, and you're going to have to do blah, 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 blah. Your country is in crisis, and they need you to act, and this is what you need to do in order to save the country. Who do you think runs your country then? The person on the other end of that bloody phone call who tells your commander-in-chief to stop fulfilling his promises and to start selling out the people. That person runs the country more than the Prime Minister does. We'll be right back.
There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back. This is the central broadcast coming live from the Kremlin. We have seized control of the United States, and our great comrade Barack Obama is going to enact the NDAA, and all of you will spend quite some time in the gulag that we call the camp. Absolute perfect timing with the cackle there, mate. All right, we have two callers on the line at the same time. We still have Tim.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, we still got Lisa.
I'm here. Hi, Tim.
How you doing? You know, Lisa, I hear you all the time, but I never was on the radio at the same time.
I know. One big happy family. I've heard you a lot, too. You're fun to listen to.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, but you know...
We've been getting heaps of comments about the both of you as well from people on the YouTube, and they're loving the calls.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. And I wanted to know as well, how do you contact callers? A lot of people have been asking as well, how do you come and talk to these people? What's their email or anything like that? I don't know.
Mine is if you want to contact me for fun and frolics and information, the best thing to do is just check my blog on generaljimmy.com, and it's known as Darren's Alternative Theory, and it is out the first of every month. So there's a little comment section at the bottom of every blog, and you can connect with me via Facebook or leave a message there. If you agree, if you disagree, if there's an avenue of investigation you would like me to look into for a future article, I would be more than willing to do that. And a world exclusive will be sometime next couple of months. I will be doing a review of a certain Vincent Eastwood for one of my blog entries, which should be rather interesting and rather funny and a bit crazy. So that is generaljimmy.com, and it is Darren's Alternative Theory.
And also, I wanted to bring up a point of conjecture. Did you say, correct me if I'm wrong, if you're interested in a frolic of conversation, what exactly is, if you said that, a frolic of conversation?
A frolic of conversation is when you have, how can I describe it? It's like a mad Saturday night going into Sunday morning.
So it's a mixture between alcohol, psychosis, and conversation.
No, you've got it wrong. It's a mixture. Oh. Tim might know what I mean. It's a mixture of a lot of Remy Martin, a Saturday night, a Sunday morning adventure wildness, and Jodeci is on in the background at very moderate volume, not to wake up the neighbours. And rather than it be a physical entity, my mention, as you so described it, is more of an intellectual one. So it's more intellectual but intimate at the same time. That is my own creation, my own baby, and I trademark it.
Alright. Well, sorry. Tim, Lisa, if you want to send an email to me, if you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com/contact.html, I think, you can flick me an email. So if people email me wanting to, get in touch with you, have a conversation, if they might be in your area or anything like that, they want to hook up for a coffee, do you mind if they contact you?
Oh, okay.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, just send me a message in through there, because there's another thing that I've noticed about the show is that a lot of people are actually starting to link up with others and start to create friendships and start organizations, and things are just popping up all over the place with people connecting through the show. So I just kind of want to facilitate that just a little bit more, because what was the old saying? A bundle of sticks together is unbreakable.
Yeah, it creates community. It's like a social network, kind of.
Yeah. In fact, we should probably have a Vinnie Eastwood social network. It would be like a scumbaggery free zone. Imagine a scumbaggery free zone.
That's my favorite word.
But you know, with the social media, I mean, it's kind of ironic, man. It brought us together. While I was like, I'm listening to you, Vinnie, you over in New Zealand or Australia, I think is where you are, and he's from Texas, I'm from the D.C. area, and we get together, we are like-minded people conversating, but yet, at the same time, you got so many diversions, just pulling people different directions through the social media, and it's like, okay, you have to kind of like get your head together and just pick your poison. Now, like what you were saying earlier, Vinny, about, like talking to different people and kind of like, to paraphrase what you're saying, you got to pick your spots. Everybody don't want to hear about chemtrails and, GMO and they're like, what you talking about? I still get laughed at now when I talk about chemtrails. And I point it out to people, and it's like, it's some things that people just want to hear about sports. They want to hear about somebody getting beat up. They want to hear about Dancing with the Stars, and that's all they want to hear. But you got to pick your spot.
Kind of like the truth movement has its own universal language, because how when you're in a foreign country and you're there for an extended period of time and you do not speak the language, kind of a reverse example, actually. You don't speak the language and you finally run into somebody who speaks your native language and you're so relieved. You're like, oh, finally, somebody who can understand me. And it's kind of that feeling. We exist, most of us, I think, exist in a world
Incredible analogy.
Well, I just thought
that's
of it.
It's beautiful.
It's a place, kind of a homecoming type thing. You can just speak the language that you are breathing and be heard, and then
it's like, how you got like an overbearing stepmother or something like that, and you have to really, really curb your behavior a hell of a lot around them. And then you're suddenly out of there and you're off having a few drinks with your mates and you're like, I can be myself again.
I was like that when I was in Germany. When I was in Germany, a lot of Germans, I was so happy. If I saw another black person and they spoke English, I ain't kind of know him from a can of paint. I was like, oh, man, I'm glad somebody can speak my I can talk in slang and...
There are some interesting things, because this phenomenon is not exclusive to the humans. Did you know that chickens are racist? Racist as they come. We've got a couple chooks in the chook house right now. I just introduced a few new breeds in there. It's like chicken apartheid in there, man. Like, seriously, they do not go anywhere near each other. If they see each other, they peck each other and they run away from each other. It's unbelievable racism. And it... It's pretty stark in there. So I was just wondering, to a point, you know, why is everybody getting really ticked off at the human race for being racist and being angry or anything like that? It happens all the time. The only problem is that now we've got the technology not only to finish the job, but to convince people that the job is worth doing arbitrarily.
Yeah. You do think of some great things, Vinny, but they also frighten me as well, the genius of your mind.
My genius frightens me all the time.
Oh, Tim. I was wondering, I've heard you often on Vinny's show, and you've been very insightful, and you seem to have had a very interesting life. And I was wondering, would you, as Vinny gave me the baton or the inspiration to do a blog, I'm trying to give you, via saying this, the same thing. Would you be interested in doing a blog on your views? Because I think you're quite an interesting person, and I would like to hear your perspective on a number of issues. So do you do a blog, or do you do anything like that, or YouTube videos to get the message out, or your own particular opinions?
No, what I normally do, I actually hit people on the street. Every now and then I put stuff on Facebook. I've never done a blog. I guess I can start doing that. But I do stuff on Facebook, which some kind is kind of like a fruitless attempt, because people don't respond to information, good information on Facebook.
I disagree, friend, because I started to think that, and then I deleted somebody off my Facebook, and then they sent me a message saying, why have you deleted me? Because I actually read what you put on the Facebook. So I refriended them, and I said, well, why didn't you mention this? And he said, well, I was afraid that if I did, people may ridicule me, who we have mutual friendships with. So, you know, just be real, and just, if you feel something passionately, Tim, just put it on your Facebook. Vinny knows I put all types on my Facebook, and have a check of my blog, and, you know, that might give you some...
And Tim, have you got me added on Facebook, Tim? Tim, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, have you got me added on Facebook, bro? Go to my website, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There's a little Facebook button there, and you can click on it. Go straight to me, man.
Okay, I'll do that. When I come over, I'll do that.
Yeah, cool, bro. All right. Thank you very much, Lisa. Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you very much, Darren.
Thank you.
And
thank
my
you.
Goodness. We have some fabulous callers and random people in the chat room, and almost everybody I ever feel is associated with the show is a really top-notch cat, you know, the kind of person you can sit down, have a chat with, have a relax with, and they're not going to abuse you or get angry or anything like that. The cool truth is, man, and they're not like cool like Tom Cruise cool or anything like that. They're just chill, man, and they're not dicks. We'll be right back some other time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be. I love you.